Welcome back to the Go in the Match podcast. I'm delighted to welcome back to the podcast, Karan Tejwani. Karan, thanks for giving up your time, mate, and coming back on.
No worries, Mike. Thank you for having me on. It's good to be back.
So firstly, you came on the podcast last year to discuss the whole Red Bull model. So if anyone hasn't already got on that, then please do go through the archives, have a listen. It's had some great feedback, so that would be really appreciated. Now, your new book, Glorious Reinvention, The Rebirth of Ajax Amsterdam, is your new book. So that's due to be released, I believe, the 21st of March 2022, but it's available for pre-order.
Yeah, that is correct. It's out in March this year and available for pre-order on the general websites, online retailers.
Fantastic. So from what I've seen, having a look, quick look at it, it looks really interesting, mate. I've always personally had a little bit of a love affair with Ajax Amsterdam, as many people do. So can you just tell our listeners, firstly, what the book's about and what gave you the ambition to write it?
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Ajax is, for the neutral, it is the neutral second favourite club. Everyone has their first club, wherever it is, but from the outside, Ajax is everyone's second favourite club and everyone wants Ajax to do well, unless you support PSG or Feyenoord. You know, that was one of the main motivations for myself. I think that Ajax were, for me, a very intriguing club, a very historical club. And that 2018-19 season, when they reached the Champions League semi-final, that was the first exposure of the true Ajax that I truly had. And I always look back to that game against Real Madrid as my favourite club game of all time because of how impactful and how many narratives there were in that match. So that was the main inspiration behind this book. But based on what's covered inside the book itself, it looks at, in a nutshell, Ajax in the 21st century. So, you know, if you look back to the 70s and the 80s of Ajax, you think of great names like Cruyff, Michels, the three European Cups. In the 80s, it's perhaps Van Basten and Roodelay and the successful managerial stint by Johan Cruyff. In the 90s, obviously, we have Van Gaal and Van der Sar and the baby Ajax that won the Champions League. But there's a gap in the 2000s where Ajax sort of became an unknown quantity in European football as a result of the big five leagues claiming the power of European football and the other leagues becoming more sort of wanting to protect themselves more than wanting to expand. So it looks at that period in the start of the book of the early 2000s when Ajax was struggling. That is when they were not winning as many trophies. They had a gap of 7 years where they didn't win the league title. And there were managerial issues, management issues on and off the pitch, where the club was spending far more money than they had and they were spending it ineffectively. And most importantly, they left their youth academy behind. Now, everyone knows Ajax and they associate with their famous academy, which has produced players for years and years. And it focuses on where that academy sort of was left behind. And then the second part of the book, it focuses on the revolution, which is Johan Cruyff's Velvet Revolution, the peaceful takeover, which meant that the old management was gone and the old directors were gone in favor for the new people who were ex-Ajax players, such as now we see Mark Overmars and Edwin van der Sar, for example. And they were all led by Johan Cruyff, and it focuses on that era. And then the third part of the book looks at their more recent successes, such as I mentioned, the Champions League semi-final or the Europa League final in 2017 and the league title wins they've had in recent years, as well as their transfer policy and academy policy. So it basically covers Ajax in the last 22 years and how they've changed from over the last few years.
Right, okay. And you sort of mentioned there that they lost their way over the years. What do you think that exactly was down to? I know you touched on it there in terms of money and transfers, but is there anything more that you think is in terms of why they did lose their vision?
There's lots of internal and external factors in that. You know, obviously, they won the Champions League in 1995 under Louis van Gaal. And by the end of that century, none of those players were at the club or none of the starting players were at the club. And they were all gone for either free transfers or low-cost transfers as a result of the introduction of the Bosman rule. And because they didn't give their players long-term contracts, they couldn't hold on to their best players. The biggest example can be Patrick Kluivert, who left out on a low fee. And he mentioned in his autobiography that he didn't leave for himself. He left because Ajax were being complacent and they thought that he could stay there forever despite not giving him improved terms. So the Bosman ruling was... It affected lots of clubs outside Europe's top leagues, in England, Italy and Spain. And Ajax were perhaps the most affected by it because they were so complacent. Okay. The second big thing was the move to the Amsterdam Arena. Now, obviously, they were in De Meer before and they loved De Meer, the fans. But when they moved to the new arena, it was a bit futuristic, a bit modern, which is what they didn't like. and it felt like a soulless stadium for the first about decade or so. So adapting to it with, for the fans was a bit of a change. And obviously a stadium can't determine how good or bad a team is, but the feeling of the fans just was not there anymore. And they were modernizing in a way that the fans didn't want. They became a club that was dealt with on the stock exchange. They became AFC Ajax NV, which is basically what the Dutch equivalent for a publicly traded football club.
Right.
And also they set up this customer service department, which was very criticized by fans because the fans didn't want to be seen as customers. So they lost their connection with the fans, and ultimately the fans lost interest in a way. But the management issues came in, and when they got in their money from going public, they wasted a lot of money on useless transfers or ineffective transfers, expensive transfers that they didn't need. And the old method was to bring in players, but now these players from the academy weren't good enough because of the sort of negligence they showed as a result of coaching. The coaches weren't as good, so they weren't able to promote the right players, and they weren't, as a result, they had to spend big, and because they spent big, the whole cycle was just broken in a way. Yeah. So that was changed, and at the time, they were led by Uri Coronel, who was the chairman, and he was criticized heavily, so he launched this report, or he launched a commission where he wanted to see what was going wrong, and even though he identified the right issues, they did nothing to act upon it. So around the end of the 2000s, he was under tremendous pressure to leave the club, and he eventually did because Johan Cruyff turned on him, and he basically wanted him to go. And when Johan Cruyff sort of says he's not the right person, the Ajax fans will become a member of Team Cruyff, and they want to favour Johan Cruyff. So that was ultimately the end for him, and that's when the changes started happening.
I mean, you touched on Cruyff there, and Ajax is so notoriously known for its academy and style of play. Do you think that's something as well that makes outsider fans, like maybe myself, have a bit of a fondness to a club like Ajax? You know, they are a likeable club for their style, for their fans, but it all, like you say, stems from Johan Cruyff.
Yeah, you are. You could say that. I mean, you know, I think for any fan of any football club, when you see an academy player rising, or through your own ranks and see them become from essentially boys to men, there's a sort of affection you have. And because Ajax have essentially a whole team of that, or in their pomp had a whole team of that, it sort of gives you this natural affection for them that you want to see them doing well because they're a brilliant young team playing football in what is commonly seen as the right way, in a way, where you see it as, you know, this is beautiful, attractive football. And it's attacking football that you want to see at your team. So because they did that, it was sort of a natural selection that they were, in your head, the right team to support. And I think it comes down historically as well. There's this romanticism attached to Dutch football, and it stems back from the 70s when they won the World Cup finals twice. So that sort of thing where Ajax were at the core of that sort of made Ajax the natural second club. So that's where it comes from. And even now, we see them... it took them a lot of years and lots of trial and error to sort of come to this point where we have players like Matthijs de Ligt, Frenkie de Jong, Donny van de Beek coming through. And that sort of love for Ajax was reborn, and that's what they wanted. So it was a successful reinvention of their club.
And obviously former Man United goalkeeper, Edwin van der Sar. So he's now the chief executive of the club, if I'm right in saying. What exactly has he done within his role to help improve Ajax? Because he does seem to be a face that's used quite a lot during this last decade of Ajax.
Yeah, there's this common misconception around Edwin van der Sar, which is that he is the director of football, but he's got nothing to do with the football side of things. He's got a touch in it, but not as big as an influence because he works as the director. He worked before as the director of marketing, and then now he's the CEO of the club. So he does an entirely different role to what Marc Overmars does, who's actually director of football. So Edwin van der Sar, he joined the club in 2012, sorry, which was immediately after he retired or a year after he retired. And in that time of his retirement, he went to the Johan Cruyff Institute to study football business and sort of understand football business. Okay. And he says that he learned it as a result of playing at Manchester United. Now, we all know since 2005, since the Glazer takeover, that Manchester United have become this epitome of hyper-capitalization in football, hyper-capitalism in football, and they want to expand their sponsorship and their international tours and everything related to off-the-pitch stuff. And he sort of picked up from that. So he's sort of a beneficiary of the Glazer ownership, and he learned plenty from David Gill. So he took up from that. And that's, instead of going down the coaching route, like many former footballers, he decided to go down the business route. And he went to university for that, picked up a professional education. He did very well in at university level. And that's when he was appointed at Ajax. Now, initially, there was a bit of skepticism over his appointment. Many felt that there was a bit of nepotism involved, that because he was an ex-Ajax player, he was given favorable treatment. But within a short time, he proved himself, because he had two objectives in the start, which was to find Ajax a proper shirt sponsor, or a more beneficial shirt sponsor where they made more money, which he achieved. And second was to expand their reach in China, the whole country, which was, you know, have more international reach out there, do a few competitions, sponsorships, etc. And he achieved both goals quite well. And by 2016, he was bumped up to the position of CEO, because he was quite successful in his role as the director of marketing. So that is his role. He has very little to do with the actual football side of things, but he's a face of the club from the marketing side. And it's quite successful as well, because he is a very recognizable figure. He's probably one of the best goalkeepers of all time. And because of having that status as being Edwin van der Sar, he gives Ajax this extra sort of affection in a way that, you know, these people have ex-players in high positions and they're doing well as a result of that. So it gives fans more attention from the outside looking in.
And I just wanted to focus on Erik ten Hag as well. Obviously, he's the manager there. He's really been the sort of steer for the playing style as well. How vital has he been, having someone like him leading all these teams that he's had? And do you think he's possibly destined for bigger things?
Very important. And yes, he is destined for much bigger things. I think he's one of the brightest managers in the game at the moment. And he's still quite young compared to the general managerial age range. But just like Van der Sar, his initial start was quite difficult as well, because he came in at a difficult moment. He joined in the middle of the 2017-18 season. So it was just about 4 years ago, 4 years and a month ago. And he joined at a time where Ajax, at the end of the previous season, reached the Europa League final. And then they let go of Peter Bosz, who was a fairly popular manager. And then they had a difficult period under the previous manager, Marcel Kaiser. And they weren't doing very well, because they were quite far behind in all their competitions. They were out of Europe. So Ajax needed a boost, and Ten Hag wasn't necessarily seen as the man to provide that. Because once again, claims of nepotism came up, because they felt that Ten Hag was only appointed because he had a good relationship with Marc Overmars, who he worked with at Go Ahead Eagles in the past. But it took him about 6 months to sort of prove himself, because in that 6 month, in his half season that he was there, they lost to PSV at home, ultimately losing the league title, and that didn't really help his reputation. But in the following season, they reached the Champions League semi-final, and immediately there was this sort of feeling of awe that this Ajax are playing in the way Ajax are expected to play. You know, the games against Real Madrid, Juventus were all helpful, and even the semi-final when they lost to Tottenham, they were, for most of the tie, the better team apart from one half. And that sort of gave him a bit of reverence around Ajax, and ultimately made his reputation. So he had a difficult start, but he managed to pick himself up, which is why he has his reputation now, that he's one of the brightest managers in Europe. In his 4 years at Ajax, he's reached the Champions League and semi-final. He's won two league titles and two cups, and that could easily have been three and three cups because of COVID and the season that was cancelled in the Netherlands. It should have been three league titles and three cups. And he's in the knockarounds again. And in that time in Europe, he's in the Champions League. They've played away games at Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Real Madrid, Juventus, Tottenham, and they've not lost. They beat Dortmund this season 7-1 on aggregate, or in the two group stage games, 7-1. And it's given his reputation, which he fully deserves.
Yeah, like you've said there, the sort of the success of the rebuild of the academy, the way of playing in that last decade, obviously shown by, like you touched on there, Europa League final against Man United, reaching the semi-final of Champions League 2019. That's surely the evidence that the philosophy of the club is working. But do you think that they have to have the evidence to continue it? You know, if Ten Hag wouldn't have gone these far and these competitions and carried on the sustainability, like you say, and they absolutely smashed Dortmund this season in the Champions League. If he hadn't have evidenced all these things, would it have, you know, thrown off the sort of rebuild at all? Would they have looked to stem a different way, do you think?
I don't think it would have thrown it off entirely, but I think that it wouldn't have been as highly praised as it normally is. Because at the time, even if Ten Hag hadn't joined, they had a very strong core in their team. And that came as a result of the academy, because in goal they had Andre Onana in front, De Ligt, in front of that, De Jong, in front of that, perhaps someone else. And that core was there to build on, and they were able to do it. And at the time, even their transfer policy was being altered, where they were focusing on more South American talent rather than Scandinavian talent. You know, even now we see players like David Neres, who recently left, Anthony, who's still there, Lisandro Martinez, Edson Alvarez. So these sort of players came in, and that came as a result of a changed policy. And more importantly, they had a policy where they broke their old wage cap, and that resulted in the signing of older players or more experienced players like Daley Blind and Dusan Tadic. And they've been perhaps the most important figures in this story. So there were changes being made so they can accommodate to modern football. And, you know, if Ten Hag hadn't arrived and if they hadn't reached the Champions League semi-final or even the Europa League final, I think that the evidence would have been there, but it would have been on a much smaller scale.
Yeah,
It would have been a more gradual improvement rather than such a rapid improvement, because the improvement mainly happened in the last 5 years. So that's basically what's happened here. And that's to sum up the whole point. It was basically those tiny changes in small areas that ultimately led to a big change where we all see the Ajax as they are now.
And every time you see the achievements of the club, you know, such as winning David De Vizzi, they're always celebrating their titles with their fans, aren't they? No matter the players and teams that come through over the years, there always seems to be this real connection between the club and the fans. And I suppose an example of this, which I absolutely loved this at the time when it came out, was when they won the league. I think it was during lockdown, and the club melted down the trophy and created those little mementos for each of the 42,000 season ticket holders. You know, that's such a unique idea and statement of appreciation for their fans. Is that something, again, that makes this club so special?
Yeah, the point slipped from my mind. I was going to mention it, but it is an important point that relationship with their fans was rebuilt once again. As I mentioned earlier, when they moved to the Amsterdam Arena, it took about a decade or so before the fans fully settled in. And the feeling of settling in only came in after they won the league title in 2011. So it was about almost 15 years before the fans felt that this is truly our home and we're here to stay for a very long time. And now it's their place for sure, and they feel like it. And that's come as a result of the current management doing more to be more connected to their fans. And that's not only the example you mentioned about the stars being melted and given to fans. That's only one example of so many things they've done for their fans. I spoke to so many fans for the book itself, and they mentioned how they've become more of a warmer club. You know, before they were seen as a colder club, but the connection was gone and there wasn't much communication. But now they're always in contact with fan clubs and fan groups and ultras, trying to ensure things are at peace and they're comfortable. There's more accessibility towards fans and the ground. The social media team is perhaps the best in European football because of the content they produce and how they try to connect on a digital scale. And that's quite important now, especially with lockdown and all coming in, where you can't see your fans in stadiums every day. Even now when in the Netherlands, where there's lockdown and you can't attend games, that sort of connection is important online. And by far, they're the most followed club in the Netherlands on any social media platform, at least 3 or 4 times more ahead than, say, PSV or Feyenoord. So that's been very strategically rebuilt in a very good way. So that sort of thing's been important too. And perhaps arguably the most important thing, more than the change transfer policy or more than the change academy, that their fans felt like they were Ajax fans once again.
And how do you think the Ajax fans view their club now? You know, bringing through the likes of your De Ligts and your Van der Beeks, and you can see how much they adored them. But for them to be sold on to the likes of Juventus and Man United, do you think they become tired of selling players, or do you think they fully understand that, you know, money talks in this football world that we're in now, and players want to move on to different things? And do you think there's a bit of frustration there, or do you think there'll ever come a point where Ajax say, no, you know, we're hanging on to our players and we're going to strive for glory in Europe like the olden days? Or do you think this sort of natural conveyor belt of talent, you know, will always come through, and it's the structure that they're more, you know, the fans are, you know, embedded into the structure rather than, you know, the players themselves, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's from the club's perspective and eventually the fans' perspective, it's seen as, you know, we're Ajax and we play in the Netherlands. And even though we're the biggest club here and the most successful one, that we can't keep our players here because in England or in Spain or Italy, they can earn two or three times more money. And more importantly, they can play on a grander stage. In the Premier League, for example, if a player moves from Ajax to the Premier League, he's playing games every week against top clubs at a different level. And perhaps even expanding his own career and his own portfolio of strengths, which is almost, it's quite difficult in the Netherlands where the competition is still quite low. They're still at top flight clubs, they still use 3G pitches, which you would find in England and fourth, fifth division clubs. So it's a bit of a problem there. So they accept that it's difficult to hold on to the players for a very long time, and they accept that they have to sell their players at some point. And all they want is for it to be in a respectful and perhaps polite way, where there's a mutual agreement that, you know, it's time to move on and we accept your decision and you can go to wherever you want, provided we get the right fee. Now, we've seen in the past with De Ligt, De Jong, Van de Beek, where they left in a peaceful way. And perhaps even there's a nice message, you know, all the social media teams produce great videos and great tributes to these players who provided so much to the clubs. Perhaps the only nasty one has been this year with Andrea Onana, who's decided to leave on a free to perhaps Inter Milan. And that's ended in a bad way because the club supported him in his drugs ban, and then he's come back and refused the contract. So the fans are fairly disappointed with that. But with the players that left before, they've accepted that this is part of the club and part of the life cycle of a footballer, and they want to expand their careers in a bigger league. And that's just how football is at the moment. But the feeling at the club still is that, you know, as one star goes, we have another in the making. And as while that's being developed, there's another behind that as well. So there's always a plan B, plan C. You know, in 2019, when Frankie de Jong moved to, or his move was confirmed in January to Barcelona, that same window, they signed two players to possibly replace him. And same for De Ligt, when De Ligt was gone, when it was expected that De Ligt would be gone in the summer, which he did, they signed two players to sort of replace him as well. And they're now in the first team, Lisandro Martinez and Edson Alvarez. So it's just always a very smart, strategic way of thinking forward, like how you'd expect at a top club.
Yeah, and you touched on people like Van der Sar, Overmars, people like that, that are now in the club doing specific roles. There seems to be this thing in football now where people want personnel that have been at the club prior. So you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went to United, Lampard went to Chelsea. You know, I think Vieira probably wants to go and manage Arsenal. Steven Gerrard wants to come and manage Liverpool. And it's almost because they've been at the club before, people know they've got a passion for the club. But there's got to be a certain grounding that it's not just the job for the boys, you know. I almost feel like maybe like at Everton, you know, Duncan Ferguson's been there for a long time. Leighton Baines is there now. It needs to make sure that it's not just jobs for the boys, you know, they don't just get it for the sake of it. Have Ajax been very careful about the personnel that they pick and the certain positions? You touched on Van der Sar took a year out after his retirement and, you know, went and learned the role properly and then came into the job. Is that something that they've been very particular about?
Yeah, they have. And it's part of their new philosophy as well. And this came as a result of the revolution. Johan Cruyff specifically mentioned that he wants players who have been at the club so they understand the feeling of Ajax before returning. And most importantly, he wanted them to have some level of experience at the top level before they came to Ajax, so that there's some proof that these people are good enough for the job. Obviously, I mentioned Van der Sar earlier. Even Marco Overmars, he worked at two different clubs before coming to Ajax. Or he went to one club, Go Ahead Eagles, before coming to Ajax. That was a successful thing. He was quite successful there because he took the club, Go Ahead Eagles, from the second division to the first division. And that was part of his success. He did it quite a smart way as well. Didn't spend much. There was no real financial issues and it was a sustainable way of going upwards. And even before that, he had a business background. When he was a player himself, he was one of the 500 richest men in the Netherlands, because of his investments in hotels and his fancy vehicles and stuff like that. So he was a very smart businessman while he was a football player, and he carried that forward to his career after his retirement. So there was valid evidence that he was good at his job. And even the same for Van der Sar, the coaches as well, they brought in Frank de Boer, who he might not have the best career after Ajax, but before that, at an academy level, he was doing fairly successfully for them. And his assistant was Dennis Bergkamp, who had a similar experience. So there were ex-Ajax players who came in with a significant level of experience before succeeding at Ajax. And you may not always have that at other clubs, you know, people like, say, Frank Lampard, who came to Chelsea without really a significant level of experience at Derby County. He had one season where there's a bit of luck involved, a bit of, you know, he was a bit lucky to get the Chelsea job at the end, and ultimately we saw how that ended. Same you could say for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who had 10 years of experience, but perhaps managing at Molde is different from managing at Manchester United. So it's not always going to work out, but some top level clubs do still believe in that philosophy. Obviously, Ajax do it now. Bayern Munich have been doing it for decades. Barcelona tried it to some extent, and sometimes it works, sometimes not. So there has to be a certain level of thinking behind this to make it work, and Ajax have pulled it off successfully so far.
And I suppose, so my last question as well is, obviously, when you were writing the book and you were doing, looking into the whole research of Ajax, just doing a bit of research myself, do you think some people sort of forget how big Ajax is as a football club? You know, they've won 4 European Cups, and like you've said, in the last decade, they've sort of renewed themselves and got their name back out there. Almost, I'd probably say, equivalent to like AC Milan. You know, they dropped off for a long time. They're starting to get back in the Champions League, and you hear a lot about them a lot more. And I think maybe sort of my generation of fan maybe forget how big these football clubs are. So did you sort of see that when you were writing the book?
Yeah, I think so. I did notice it. I experienced it myself. I was born in 1999, and for a period, nobody really talked about Ajax because of, firstly, the fact that they were a Dutch club, and Dutch clubs aren't really seen grandly from a wider scale because of the top 5 leagues. And secondly, because they didn't really have much to shout about. They won cups in the 70s, like so many others. You could say Benfica were the same, or perhaps Sparta Prague or whoever was the same. And it's not the same anymore. So there was this general feeling for a whole generation of fans who were born in this era of social media and in this era of the internet, where the internet's so popular that, you know, you go on the internet, you see videos of Barcelona, Real Madrid, United, Liverpool, and you go outside, you see shirts of Barcelona, Real Madrid, etc. But you rarely see Ajax. But now the goal is to make Ajax more popular again, and they've been successful in that. So yeah, I do agree with you that there's been a whole generation of fans that missed out on what Ajax truly is and what Ajax truly stands for. And that includes myself until a certain point. But it's good to see them now. I think that football needs a good Ajax. I think that because of the romanticism attached to the club and so on, and how much they've given to the game, whether that's in the 70s with Johan Cruyff or in the 90s with Louis van Gaal, football needs a good Ajax to have, you know, this general feeling that there's a club out there that has so much history in the game, that's provided so much, and we need them to have a successful time. And it's the same for Dutch football as a whole. You know, when Ajax do well, the Netherlands do well. You know, much of the 2019 Champions League team from Ajax were playing at the Euros.
Yeah.
And for a period, while Ajax weren't producing well, the Netherlands missed out on the Euros, and they missed out on the World Cup in 2016 and 2018. And that's always been the case, that a good Ajax is a good Netherlands. And as I mentioned earlier, football needs a good Netherlands.
So finally, just before I let you go, mate, where can people go to pre-order the book and also find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on mostly on Twitter. My handle is Karan_Tejwani26. And the book can be found on all major retailers, including Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith, Book Depository, if you're living abroad. And yeah, that's mostly it.
And I'll put a link to the book as well for Amazon in the bio for our listeners if they want to jump on that. So fantastic, mate. Just once again, thank you so much for coming on, and all the best with the book in March.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
If you enjoyed that episode and want to keep notified for future episodes, please make sure you subscribe, follow and share, and of course, leave us a 5-star rating. You can now follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, all at Go in the Match, to keep updated for future episodes and updates on the podcast.